Welcome to SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. And for Labor Day, also brought to you by Madison Teachers Incorporated, Madison Firefighters Local 311, and Teamsters Local 695. And if I do not not mistaken, those are all members of the AFL-CIO of Wisconsin.
Absolutely.
All right, all good and all in good standing. Well, my brother from another mother, Phil Neuenfeld.
Who are we sure it's another mother?
I mean, maybe so. Then no mother could have put up with both of us. AFL-CIO Wisconsin.
To feed us, that's for sure.
Happy Labor Day, and thanks for coming over from Milwaukee to Madison for Labor Day.
Happy Labor Day to you, Sly, and it is such a great feeling on Labor Day, starting out down in Milwaukee. I was on the NPR this morning talking to people around the state about the value of unions, the vision of unions, the fact that the latest Gallup polls show more and more favorability in terms of people's eyes of the value of unions, having a discussion about why that is. And I think with all the attacks on working families, with the deregulation of overtime laws, the attacks on health care, just change after change, attacking prevailing wage, on and on and on. The only way people are going to be able to secure equal pay for work and all these other things is through being in a union.
I'm sure you saw the number on how union membership went down in different cities, including this one. Sometimes Madison, people don't think of Madison as a union town, but Madison is a union town, and yet, because of Act 10, lost half membership. Nina Menasha, Wausau, 10,000 people that are, union jobs gone. That's tough.
It is tough. And I think, they took a good shot with Act 10. There's no question. It was a divide and conquer strategy. Wages have gone down in those areas. Small businesses have hurt. The local economic development's hurt. It's a time for people to really think about what's going on and come together and talk about the need for laws to level the playing field between the worker and the corporate CEOs. Also, the latest figures, I implore people to look at the Center of Wisconsin Strategy, State of Working Wisconsin, and you should really talk to them because their study shows in the last year how the income gap has gotten even larger here in the state of Wisconsin.
Well, isn't that something? I hear these business people come on and give the statistics on the news radio stations like WBBM in Chicago, and they go like, we don't understand the unemployment rate's gone down and the labor market is tightened, but wages are going up, and they feign ignorance about why wages aren't going up.
Well,
I mean, seriously,
right.
Honestly,
well,
who couldn't connect those dots?
Right, it's called greed. I mean, and it's wages. It's also the infrastructure. It's transportation.
But it's going after, 30 years of going after unions.
30 years after going unions, 30 years of attacking workers, blame the worker mentalities. I mean, in a way, what they're doing right now by saying they can't find skilled workers, they're still trying to do a blame the worker mentality for a system that they created. It is something. We as workers and as unions and communities of interest, we've got to start asking questions. The next time someone comes out and says, make America great again, the first question you should ask is, for who? The next time they say we're for family values, you need to ask, whose families are you valuing? Those are the kind of dialogues that we've got to see going on.
Well, let me ask you a little bit about the perception of workers and Trump. Because President Trump has an image of being pro-worker by some, because he let's give him credit for killing the TPP. I will right here say I give him credit for killing the TPP. We don't know what he's really doing with NAFTA yet.
We do not know.
But the
yet.
Rest of his record on labor is not good.
It is not good. And you've got to look deep. You got to look at things like the NLRB appointments. And
that's
all
the National Labor Relations
on.
Board.
Peeling back. I mean, they came out with his daughter going to be for equal pay for equal work for women. Now you look at how they're, watering down those regulations. Just basically it's one anti-work effort after another. The state's assaulting prevailing wage are all part of the message that's sent out of the White House. So if anybody did vote for Trump, they need to ask, the question about why. because it had to be for the wrong reason.
Are there some perceptions that aren't... Donald Trump did not win the labor vote.
No. No, I think that, you know, when Trump beat Hillary Clinton, there was a lot of...
Well, in the Electoral College.
Electoral College, yeah. Yes. You're right. I stand corrected. There was a lot of discussion about what exactly happened. I mean, there was a lower voter turnout in Milwaukee County. There were a lot of other counties that did not meet their goal. There's no question that the campaign didn't get the kind of enthusiasm and energy that we needed to do that. Some people want to blame the third party. Some people want to say, well, people who were for Bernie never recovered from it, and on and on and on. I mean, you're talking about 22,000 votes, if I remember right, in the scope of a statewide election. That is not a lot. So, why did that happen? I think probably it's the sum total and part and parcel of all the things that are being discussed.
Let me ask you, why is it that working class voters in Milwaukee and Dane County and Eau Claire County and I guess maybe Portage County, Stevens Point a little bit, were more likely to stick with the Democratic side than Kenosha, Racine, Manitowoc, Green Bay? Rock County still stayed,
right?
Why is that?
Well, some say it's the water, but I think it's more complicated than that. I think it has a lot to do with union density, actually. I think it has to do with, the activity.
The retirees at the UAW are still doing a good job in Rock County.
They absolutely are, and they remind their families about why they can afford college and why they can afford the things they have, that it was a union wage and a union job that provided that for them and had access to the middle class, and a lot of people have not forgotten that. But, too many are starting to forget that, so that's what we need to do is organize.
What's wrong with the culture of the country where even on the liberal network, MSNBC, they don't even mention Labor Day? They don't bring up any issues. They don't talk about what, maybe they talked about Trump's first labor nominee, the guy from Carl's Jr. and Hardee's. But, I forgot his name already, but he wasn't good. But no salute to workers. No talk about Labor Day. What is wrong? Everybody's a worker, whether you're in a union or not.
It is sad. It is sad the way that the media... I mean, just remember, the media, with the exception of you and some others, thank God, you're like Radio Free Europe, right?
Yeah.
You're getting the real word out there. I mean, these media outlets are all owned by corporate big shots, right? So, they're only gonna talk up our side so much. But I want to point out to the Gallup poll that was released late last week, where it shows that, unions are really kind of moving up at pretty good great strides in terms of how people view them in a positive manner. I think the latest numbers is a 61% popularity, which is the highest since 2003.
A couple questions here. This is pretty amazing considering how he behaved in the Obama and Clinton administration. Lawrence Summers, it's time to balance the power between workers and employers. Why didn't he have that attitude, when he was Treasury Secretary and pushing Barack Obama towards free trade? Why didn't he have that? Really, Lawrence Summers? Is this an epiphany?
Well, who knows what it takes to make them to wake up? Let's just be happy.
Well, I think they see the labor market tightening and wages still aren't going up. There's something wrong.
There's something wrong.
And then there's this piece that William Forbath and Brishon Rogers wrote. It's an opinion piece in the New York Times. He's a professor of law and history at the University of Texas, and she works at Temple, talking about a different way to organize. Now, when we grew up, there was Laddish, there was A.O. Smith, there was Oscar Meyer here in Madison, there was Gischelt in Madison. High density, and really this is why we're seeing success in Nevada with Las Vegas. There's density in those casinos, right to organize. And
right.
Harry Reid knows how to organize.
Right.
When you don't have that type of density anymore, workers are more dispersed. How do you organize?
Well, I mean, it still comes down to the point that at the end of the day, workers have got to be willing to step forward and say, we understand that we're going to have more power collectively than we do individually. But keep in mind, Sly, that the laws, as far as how the NLRB views elections, the way the rules are set up, still allows employers to do one-on-one meetings, to threaten, to intimidate, to fire,
to harass. We saw that at Nissan.
And you've seen that in a lot of other places as well. So until some of those laws change, it's going to continue to be an upward fight on these sort of things. But it's a fight that we're going to always continue to do. I mean, look around today. You know, you've got a huge turnout here. And it's people who are feeling the need to come together, right?
So they say progressives should put together a labor law reform at the top of their agenda. The National Labor Relations Act, written in the 1930s when big factories and large industrial companies dominated our company, its provisions are a terrible fit for today's economy in two ways. First, because it arose out of the struggles of factory workers with big corporate employers, our labor law encourages bargaining at the employer or worksite level. This made sense when most workers in large factories, but today's workplaces are smaller. Second, our labor laws hold businesses accountable only to the workers whom they employ in an old-fashioned contractual sense. That too made sense in the industrial era when leading companies had millions of employees. But today's janitors, Amazon delivery workers, basically what they're saying is you should be able to bargain contracts across employers. Do you think some of these changes should be made?
I agree there needs to be changes made to the way organizing in the NLRB, as I said, the way that you could go about reforming and changing the laws. I do think, you know, it depends a lot on how the industry is organized, you know, what makes sense, what doesn't make sense. So I need to look at this.
Right.
I'm
going to let you take this.
All right.
I'm going to let you take all my paperwork
all
home
right,
here.
All right.
Because I thought you might find it interesting.
Especially that one, I will. Okay. I mean, the question of how you organize big box employers and the Amazons of the world and so many others is going to be a challenge, clearly.
I want you to make sure you make Jeff Bezos, you know, stay awake at night, okay?
Well, and so many others.
You know, isn't it a golden opportunity, though, now that the Sisters of St. Mary are in Wisconsin's SSM Health and Aurora? Wouldn't those be prime targets to organize?
Yeah.
Somebody told me it would take $1 million to organize Aurora.
Everybody has an opinion of how you go about doing stuff, you know, whether it's campaigns or organizing. But I think as long as you look at the dollar figures, we're on the wrong track, because we're always going to be outspent by the corporate side, by the billionaires. We have to, I think, roll up our sleeves and view organizing the same way our, you know, people in our history have organized, the one-on-one conversations, the handshakes, the moving ahead, the forming alliances, how to get people together and talk about what's really going on, and the value of you know, justice in their workplace and having a voice in their workplace. I don't think there's any shortcuts, and it's a money issue, but I think if it's just a money issue that's discussed,
I got the ball rolling at St. Mary's here in Madison after my colonoscopy the other day. I talked to the nurses about organizing. they couldn't believe it. I was still in anesthesia.
I was going to say, do you remember what you said, or did you just go on and on, or what?
I thought it was a golden opportunity, and I reminded them that I was, you know, as a good Catholic, that Pope Francis would agree with me.
That's right. But did the colonoscopy turn off?
Everything, yes.
Everything's okay.
Yeah, they reminded me that maybe my diet could be a little better.
And it's always good to raise those questions after the medical treatment.
That's right. As before. So right. Phil Neuenfeld.
All right,
AFL-CIO, Wisconsin. Thanks for coming to Sly's.
But it's always to see us, Sly. Right. Enjoy the rest of the day.
All right.
And you got great music.
It's a beautiful day.
Yeah.
All right. Sly'sOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
Sly'sOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Making stuff matters, because when we make things in America, America makes it. American workers and families make it. Our communities make it. Consider this. For every one manufacturing job in our communities, five more jobs are supported. Manufacturing jobs pay an average of 10 to 50% more than service sector jobs. That allows working families to support their local businesses, schools, emergency services, and more. Creating 2.5 million new manufacturing jobs would mean at least $100 billion for our economy over the next decade. Domestic manufacturing is the green economy. It's among the cleanest, most efficient, and productive in the world. That's why the United Steelworkers and our more than 1 million members and retirees are fighting so hard to protect and grow manufacturing. Because making stuff really does matter. Join our fight. Visit usw.org and like us at facebook.com/steelworkers. Support American manufacturing. Buy American. Buy Union.